I'm going to move really quickly because I have a couple challenges in this presentation. The first is I'm going to try to bridge the gap of the social determinants and the delivery system reform conversation. And I'm going to try to do it in 10 minutes or less. But I'd like to begin with an overall comment about how systems of oppression survive and thrive. And it's when those of us who should be aligned are pitted against each other. And in my agency, I often have conversations, not only at the budget level, but at the programmatic level, about the health equity work and the delivery system reform work. And I almost always sense tension in the room between the two critiques. So I'm going to try to bridge them in this presentation, and we'll see how it goes. Oh, I don't have any relationships to disclose. And I'm going to talk about why, what, and what. And I'm going to really focus on how we pay for it, what exactly we're doing, and what does it take to get us there. So why focus on health equity? I think most of this goes without saying. Place matters. This graph shows you that in the neighborhoods with the highest concentrations of poverty, there's a significant life expectancy difference between those zip codes. And when you put that on a map, this is actually Alameda County birth and life expectancy by place or by zip code. The darker colors show you where people live the shortest. And I think the lesson I'd like you to take from this, beyond some traditional health equity language around how important place is that the safety net is ill-prepared for the impacts of multi-generational poverty. In 2010, poverty became more stable than it's been at any point in the history of America, and it's by no accident that in 2010, our children, for the first time, our children will live shorter lives than we do. So the health-wealth connection, I think, is really a fascinating conversation to look at the census data, and I hope we can put to bed, put to rest this question of, is there a health-wealth connection? And in Alameda County, when we take a look at place, we also have to remember that multigenerational poverty includes lots of things around race and class. And this slide is really meant to make you uncomfortable, because it should be uncomfortable data. In 1960, at the eve of the Civil Rights era, African Americans in Alameda County lived 4 years less than their white counterparts. Fast forward to today, that gap has grown to 6.5 years. So despite the collective wisdom and intelligence of all the people in this space, not here, but also throughout this building, we are losing. Inequity is becoming more entrenched, more difficult to address, and frankly, the tools and technologies we have at our disposal have not moved the needle. When you disaggregate this data further by more traditional healthcare disparities, again, this is comparing African Americans and whites in Alameda County, African Americans are 1.5 times more likely to be born premature, 7 times more likely to be born into poverty, 2.5 times more likely to be behind in vaccinations, 4 times less likely to read a grade level. By the time we reach adulthood, 5 times more likely to be hospitalized for diabetes, and 2 times more likely to die of heart disease. Add it all up, a cumulative impact of almost 15 years difference based on the color of your skin if you're born in Alameda County. So, admittedly, that I'm trying to make you uncomfortable, because I'm going to come to some solutions and some of our successes. A definition of inequity is differences in health which are not only unnecessary and avoidable, but in addition are considered unfair and unjust. And that is really what drew me personally to healthcare, is that it is the best payer for social justice that I've discovered. I've worked in private philanthropy. I've worked in public education. And in few places do we have a cost or unit cost model that provides something like cost-based reimbursement. And so I'm fascinated by health as a platform for social justice. So what are we doing at the access level in Alameda County as well as the social determinants level? Again, when you look at place, this is the percentage of the uninsured by city in Alameda County. We're 150 square miles, approximately 16 municipalities, and it, again, really matters where you live. In Ashland, Cherryland, almost a quarter of all residents are uninsured. So when we take a look at the difference between access and addressing the social determinants, and we try to bridge the two. In access, we're working on simplified and expanded health insurance, easy access to high-quality primary and preventative care. The previous session had Dr. Thomas Bodenheimer in it. If you haven't seen his work, it's a great click and an important click to understand how we're addressing some of the supply and demand disconnect in primary and preventative care using team-based primary care models and innovations in service delivery. Obviously, Alameda County is, after Manhattan, the second most diverse county in the nation. So we have a long-standing tradition of seeking culturally relevant providers to provide care in our safety net. And on the social determinants side, we're doing a lot of work in the built environment with healthy food, starting worker-owned co-ops, taking a look at financial practices, and a number of this other social determinants listed here. So integrating service delivery, capacity building, and policy and systems change is really what I'm trying to get at today, is that it's, of course, it's a both. So as a quick example of a success, taking an equity that we initially started with, which is really the concentration of poverty in public education and the really low penetration rates, particularly of adolescents. And when we look at the epidemiology of adolescence, as many folks in this panel, I'm sure, are aware, the leading causes of death are all preventable and largely are a focus, are questions of access. So what we did with that was took the lemon of increasing concentration of poverty and turned it into lemonade by creating a sustainable business model for primary care access in schools. And actually today we have 24 federally qualified school-based health centers. We'll open two more this year. And we have a pretty simple vision, which is for Oakland Unified School District to become the first major urban school district to offer universal access to health as a function of school enrollment. So as of today, in every middle school and high school with more than 200 students, we have a federally qualified health center. So this isn't a glorified nurse's station. This is a comprehensive clinic offering the full scope of primary care. And frankly, we got at some of the business drivers that really hurt primary care, right? No shows. If Johnny's not there, Jimmy is. And we use the EPSDT benefit, which is a critical behavioral health benefit, to make the number one utilized service in our school-based health centers to be behavioral health, second reproductive health, and third primary care, because frankly, young people are healthy, right? So in 1996, we had four. In 2000, we had eight. In 2004, we had 12. In 2008, we had 14. In 2010, we had 19. And today, by the end of 2012, we'll have 26 federally qualified school clinics. So we're really proud of this work. 80% of the operations of the clinics are sustained through the services they offer. If kids show, the clinic is sustained. So there's a built-in integrity there. And largely, we got really good at billing Medicaid and FAMPAC, which is Medicaid too, I guess. But we got pretty sophisticated on leveraging Medicaid. And we all learned some really important lessons. School clinic visits grew. Obviously, like any service in the safety net, you know, if you want to have no utilization, put a sign that says psychotherapy up in a poor community of color. You have to build alliance with the communities you serve. You have to be present. And when you do that over time, your visits grow dramatically, as this chart shows. UCSF, Institute for Health Policy Studies, has been our evaluator for the school-based health center movement, and they've evaluated every unit of service for the last 12 years in all of our school-based clinics. EPSDT is absolutely critical. This is a fascinating and important topic for children, particularly in the light of the state and federal attack on it. But if you're not aware, EPSDT is a mental health benefit. Well, obviously it's a physical health benefit as well, but it was expanded to include behavioral health in the late 90s on a very advantageous matching ratio where the feds put up 50 cents, the state puts up 45 cents, and local jurisdictions put up 5 cents to turn the spigot on. We took a very aggressive approach to EPSDT, leveraging $2 million of master tobacco settlement lawsuit dollars with over $40 million of new state and federal matching, and in the process, more than doubled the number of poor children receiving mental health services in the last decade. This is really what drove much of the operations of our school-based clinics. So we learned some important lessons, and we think actually that these lessons will help us redesign service delivery in the safety net. And so this graphic is designed as a bullseye. It was drawn in the first couple weeks that I was the health director. And this is our current healthcare system, right? An adequate supply of primary care wrapped around general acute care, where we spend $16 for every $1 we spend throughout the rest of the system. And over the last 4 years, we've worked with every 911 receiving center in Alameda County to start an urgent care center, right? Kaiser had it right. Come in with a lower acuity presenting problem, get diverted. Cost per unit goes from $400 to $500 down to $200 or $300. Important, incremental change. We'll take it while we wait the revolution. But we also felt that we had really learned some important things around the school-based health center model. And so we believe that there's a new layer of care in our service delivery system that is essential to achieving health equity. We did it in 26, or soon to be 26, school-based health centers. We opened three new federally qualified clinics and community colleges over the last 2 years, where it's the highest concentration of newly eligible folks under health reform, the 37,000 folks in the Peralta health system, Peralta community college system in Alameda County. We have a new pilot that we intend to launch in January, leveraging the connection and current service delivery model of the 911 EMS system. Remember, 85% of what firefighters now do is 911 emergency medical response. It's a critical underutilized resource, and we've discovered that even in the most marginalized communities, firefighters retain the trust of communities and they're geographically distributed. During the H1N1 epidemic, we were able to apply for and receive an emergency scope of practice expansion for our firefighters, and people lined up around the corner to get their H1N1 shots. We were able to immunize more low-income people per capita than any county in the state of California. And we've also opened up two new day laborer center portals. So the purpose behind this graphic is to show you a redesigned healthcare system with prevention, obviously the most important aspect of any healthcare service delivery system, followed by EMS, portals, primary care, urgent care, and general acute care, could help change the cost curve. And it's really dependent on building this new level of care, what we call a portal. But obviously, we can't treat away healthcare disparities. If you took the $700 million that my agency spends every year and put a dot on the map for every dollar we spend, which Dr. Tony Eitan did when he was our public health director, you'll see that the communities we spend the most money on are the communities where healthcare disparities persist the longest. If it was a question of more clinics, this wouldn't be a problem. It's not a question of more clinics. It's a question of multi-generational poverty and racism and oppression that plagues communities of color, particularly marginalized communities of color in Alameda County. So when you look at unemployment by race, ethnicity, and age, it should be no surprise to those of you in the room that communities of color are disproportionately impacted. So what we did, and actually the story behind this is incredibly dedicated volunteer staff in the Alameda County EMS division. 3 years ago, the woman who ran the juvenile detention facility invited us up to come to a career day at the camp, 95 boys in detention. We flew the helicopter in, sent the ambulances up. The Black Firefighters of Oakland volunteered. We did our day. At the end of the day, the young people write who they want to be when they grow up. For years and years and years, over 80% had written probation guard or police officer, the men of color that they'd interacted with that they thought were a role model. This year, 24 of them, or 3 years ago, 24 of them wrote EMT. In totally volunteer fashion, a couple of our EMTs went up and started training the first component of the EMT training program, first responder. And so many kids signed up that we opened up our building on Monday and Wednesday nights. 60 kids showed up the first night. And to make a long story short, to fast forward to the future, we created something called the EMS Corps. And the EMS Corps is guaranteed employment for any young person who can pass the national registry. Because as the public sector, we purchase over $150 million of transport services. When I call our ambulance provider and say, will you hire our kids, they do it, and we've now written it into our contract. So this is obviously an important model, not only for gaining access to family-sustaining employment, leveraging the purchasing power of the public sector, but also getting at the crazy stereotypes we have for young people of color. So what we hope is in January of next year, when you go to a bus stop in Oakland, on the left-hand side of the bus stop will be a picture of Carl Bolts, 6'4", African-American, first graduate of the program. It will say, in jeans and a t-shirt, it will say, hi, my name is Carl, I'm not what you think I am. On the other side of the bus stop, full size picture of Carl, will be Carl in his EMT uniform saying, I'm going to save your life, the Alameda County EMS Corps making superheroes every day. So this is an example of our work trying to gain access to family-sustaining employment, break down stereotypes, and leverage the wisdom and intelligence that every young person has. We also have taken a very strong look, and some of the staff in the room from our public health department have led this work, about the lack of supportive financial services that are that plague particularly poor communities in Alameda County. One in six Oakland residents use payday lending companies and other predatory financial services, and we've made it a specific priority of ours to develop new financial models and access to financial services that are non-predatory in nature. And beyond doing this, we've also taken a look at how do we increase the financial literacy and embed it in particularly our community-based work, home visiting work with public health nursing and maternal child and adolescent health, again with the support of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. When our home visiting staff now go into poor communities of color, we teach them as part of our home visiting protocol about how to access financial services that are non-predatory and can support their financial independence. We've also done a lot of work on unsafe housing conditions. In a one-year period, Alameda County's Asthma Start program found that 40% of the 370 homes they visited had some sign of mold. Now, this is a massive problem. First of all, Asthma Start is like one of these great interventions, low acuity, low cost. We basically go in and say, what's triggering you? And when we go in and basically provide those very simple services of how to figure, identify triggers, we can reduce ED utilization by extraordinary amounts, between 80 and 90% year to year. Not only is this a service that public health could sell to managed care, by the way, on the eve of the move to managed care, but it's also a critically relevant service that not only gets at a traditional health issue, but takes a look at how do we inform and engage families to advocate with their landlords about removing the triggers that are increasing health costs and increasing health disparities. So we partner to ensure healthy housing conditions, not only through the Asthma Start program, but also through some groundbreaking work our staff did, focusing on the impact of the foreclosure crisis. And working with the City of Oakland, we created an ordinance that basically made sure that landlords that owned foreclosed properties had to maintain them, and if they didn't, they got fined. This ordinance has raised over $1.6 million for the City of Oakland to reduce blight and improve housing conditions in Oakland. So to conclude, what has it taken to do some of these projects? And I'm focusing now on some of our social determinants work, not really the service delivery design. Because that's really about financial sophistication and entrepreneurial spirit with Medicaid, right? We have a great opportunity in front of us for those of us born after 1965. This is an extraordinary moment for coverage expansion and delivery system reform. Unfortunately, as much as I welcome the Affordable Care Act, it will be the single largest act of corporate welfare in the history of America. It will dwarf the TARP within 5 years of implementation. So we have a dramatic challenge in front of us, becoming vigilant on really continuing to curb the access of the private healthcare market. But we also know that that's not really what's going to change health outcomes. And to actually change health outcomes and to develop programs that impact the true trajectory of improved health, you have to have a strong and abiding belief in the positive wisdom and intelligence of the communities we serve. There is, I think, for all of us who make family-sustaining employment serving poor folks, there should be a lack of comfort in that work. And one personal way that, a way that our agency looks at this, is if what service we're providing, if it can't be provided by the person who's receiving it, maybe we should look at how we're delivering it. So in some defined period of time, can what are now considered passive recipients of service, can they provide that same service? That kind of cascading mentorship model is what we're looking to implement. You have to have strong multidisciplinary data analysis, not only epidemiological, traditional epidemiological analysis, but ability to cross over into other realms of social justice and public sector operations, where you can pull data and compare it to traditional healthcare data in such a way that makes a compelling case for why it's important to make these investments. There has to be courage, creativity, and entrepreneurship, goes without saying, a strong understanding of the social determinants of health, diverse staff that reflects the communities you serve, strong political leadership. Almost all of the stuff I told you about in the last few slides took an investment of discretionary resources in ways that aren't traditionally understood as healthcare programs or services. So every expenditure we make in the public sector has to be approved by our board. So it took the courage of our board to invest money in new ways. Discretionary resources in Alameda County, we have a half-cent sales tax for healthcare. It produces over $100 million a year. Without it, we'd be in deep, deep trouble. In fact, our public hospital would be closed. And a long-term commitment, because these changes weren't made in one moment. It takes quite some time to unmake them. That being said, they were made by human hands, and they can be unmade by them. This is our agency statement on health equity. Thanks.
Great. Great. Thank you very much. Let me ask a question. How many folks are here from the Bay Area? Great. How many of you have heard about the work that Alex is describing? Good.
You have some fans.
Well deserved. Why don't we take two or three questions, if there are some, before we move on. Anybody? Michael. And why don't you introduce yourself? Thank you.
I'm Michael, and I work with the Great Cancer in San Francisco. My son lives in West Oakland, and his landlord decided to repaint and somehow managed to spread lead-based paint all over their backyard. And they were about to have a child born. And the city's response and forcing a cleanup was just incredible.
Well, my quick comment on that is that one of the challenges facing marginalized communities is the mishmash of local government and jurisdiction on traditional enforcement, particularly on environmental health. So in that case, despite the fact that Oakland has its own CUPA, or certified basically an environmental health bundling of programs and supports, there is a lead abatement program run by our community development agency in collaboration with our public health department. So I'll leave you a card afterwards, and it may be that your son's connection with the city wasn't the right place to call.
I think there was a question here and then Nancy, go ahead.
Hi, my name is David, I'm with the City of Richmond. I was wondering what's your approach with, you know, people from your county working with municipality staff. I think one thing that we've been learning in our health equity work is that when health services staff is working with our planners, engineers, public works, I think we've been able to move now forward with a health equity approach on a bunch of initiatives. But I think that relationship building is really important, seeing how you're doing that within your
So yeah, but in one way, that's what makes health so interesting. And that mishmash of local jurisdictions, with some very few exceptions, Long Beach and Berkeley, municipalities don't have a public health authority. So it's why it's such a fascinating platform for social justice in a really fragmented public system, is that there is only one health authority. The Health and Safety Code and the Welfare and Institution Code gives us very, very broad powers, let alone the health officer's powers, that make it, we are a great glue, the health, and a great platform for social justice that's non-stigmatizing. So I'm not sure I can offer much more than what you just said, other than health is a great glue across multiple municipalities.
Nancy, and then Ollie.
Thanks for your presentation. So you alluded to at the very beginning, wonderful presentation on the array of programs that they're offering. You alluded to a question of tension about the two sides, the health services side and the social determinants of health side. And I'm wondering if you could speak to how you see that tension being over resources or what you see it as, and also what political obstacles you've actually run into to develop these kinds of programs. Because a question might be, it all seems so logical, it makes total sense to do these things. What's the opposition that you run into? And above all, what's the tension, and how do you use constructs around health equity to perhaps bridge some of the tension?
I hope people heard that question, because I'm not sure I can repeat it, but people have the gist. Go ahead, Alex.
So, great question. And ultimately it does come down to resources. The $700-800 million authority that I run is only $100 million of net county costs. The rest is leveraged state, federal, or philanthropic support. The vast majority federal and some state. So state and federal sources don't pay for this work. Or at least say they don't pay. Now, there are ways you can get around it. Right, adjustment disorder and otherwise specified bill DEPSDT, or Medicaid administrative activities claiming for health equity work. So there are very creative ways to do this that don't send you to jail, but at the heart of it is, I think, a fight over very scarce discretionary resources, and I would argue not a great track record yet of proven interventions. So, I think I can say to even the staff from my agency who are in the room, the critique that we are engaged in is the right critique. It's so compelling that we sometimes mistake it for the strategy. And the strategic endeavors are so new that we haven't yet had time to show the change in the needlework. So for the evidence-based practice phenomena that we're in right now, most of this stuff doesn't work so great. So we've kind of been imprisoned not only by the categorical funding nature of the programs that we run, but by the kind of demand from our funders to produce data in such a way that we can't yet because we're so new at it. So the question of how the tension plays out, I'd like to think with the right leadership, they can be integrated. And that's why adolescent health is such a critical, I'll end with this way. If you live in Alameda County right now and you have an iPhone or an Android device, you can download something called PulsePoint. And I'm going to tell the story because it's such an obvious one around EMS, but I think it has implications for the rest of us. What PulsePoint does is, if there's someone within 400 yards of you who's in cardiac arrest, your phone goes off and it teaches you to walk over. Because in only 1 in 5 times does bystander start CPR when you have cardiac arrest. Survival rates are below 10% across the nation. The reason PulsePoint's so fascinating to me is it starts to change the language around who's a provider, who's a clinician, and what our overall responsibility is to the people we used to walk by every day in the street. And so I'd like to think that projects like PulsePoint and our focus on behavioral health interventions and in the epidemiological soundness of that and adolescent health are examples of how we can bridge this gap by using more traditional funding mechanisms.
Thank you, Alex. Well, can you stay till the end? I'd love to give you guys a chance to talk, but I think we should move on, so thank you. That was terrific. Thank you again, and we will have a...